What I'm going to talk today is about multi-time states. And part of the results are old, part of the results, well, very old. Others are older, but I've never talked about them. And I will focus not so much about the interesting physics that takes place when you fix two boundary time conditions, but how to interpret the boundary conditions and what type of states we can think of doing, which I think philosophically it is a very important way in our view of the universe. So just to introduce the idea, in classical physics, if you have a particle and you know that, I don't know, this is time, say, and position, and you know the location, x0, and you know the velocity, and suppose you know all the forces, then you know everything about this particle at all times. So you can predict, you know, where it will be in the future. So if anyone makes a measurement here in the future, learns nothing new, because everything could be predicted. Also, you could infer what the past was. So no information somebody gives you about the past will be relevant. On the other hand, if you go to quantum mechanics and you know the particle, the state of the particle at a given time, psi, at time t0, and you know the Hamiltonian, so you know the entire evolution, but at a later time, you measure some operator O, which may have different eigenvalues, O1, O2, O n, you don't know what result you will get. You know the probabilities, but you don't know in each specific instance what the result will be, apart from very exceptional cases. So that means that if I wait until this time, let me call this T1 and T2, and I perform the measurement, I learn something new about the system. Now, in general, people think this information will be relevant for what will happen in the future. However, this information is also relevant about what has happened in the time interval between the preparation and this second measurement, because we'll modify the statistics of the events that happen here. Now, that sort of things you could do also classically. So, for example, you know, you have a scattering experiment. This is what you do in lots of time in physics, and particles come in, and then they would emerge. But you would be perhaps interested only in what happens when you find a particle in some detector over there. And in fact, this is what is done in all the particle accelerators and so on, because there are so many events. But if you would know the physics here, and you would know exactly where you start from, then you could, you know, exactly where the particle will go. So for convenience, it is much better to, say, select some events finally. But as a matter of principle, you are able to tell the initial impact parameter, the initial velocity, and then the entire physics is done. On the other hand, when you go to quantum mechanics and you have a scattering center here, and say you send a plane wave, you will end up with some emerging spherical wave, and that is all your information. So if a detector, you put detectors, you have no way knowing the initial wave to know whether this detector clicks or that or that. So seeing that, say, the first detector clicks, you receive new information about it. So in that sense, I can start with an ensemble of particles that are all prepared in the state psi, then perform the measurement and split the ensemble into sub-ensembles, like all the particles that started with psi and ended up the measurement O seeing the value O1, all the ones that started with psi and seeing O2, and so on. And then I can split these subensembles, and if I do any measurement here in between, I could ask what are the probabilities of the results of different measurements here in each of the subensembles. The standard way, so this is pure quantum mechanics. There is nothing out of quantum mechanics. But the general paradigm in quantum mechanics is prepare psi, make a measurement, and see what the probabilities are, which in some sense is losing information, because you can imagine that you start with psi, made a measurement, made a final measurement here, split into sub-ensembles, and then give up and do not record what happened there. So in this sense, fixing an initial state and the result for the final measurement selects the most filtered, the cleanest possible ensemble for the time in between. So I would like to focus on that thing. In particular, to this measurement, I would associate some states, you know, like the state O1, On, and so on. Being really something novel in quantum mechanics, the physics here is very interesting, and there were a lot of results that we found and interesting effects, especially connected with weak measurements. But I'm not going to talk about that. I would like to focus at the states, because you see, quantum mechanics allows me to put two boundary conditions, an initial boundary condition and the final boundary condition that is totally independent from this. It is up to me what operator to measure there, and it is up to me what outcome to select. So I will look how to describe that particular situation. So let me go here, and let me discuss a very simple example. Suppose I start with a state psi. I perform here a measurement of that operator, and I select only the cases when the eigenvalue, say, O1 corresponds, and let me denote the particular eigenstate, some arbitrary thing phi. And this happened at T1 and at T2. So as a very simple example, suppose the Hamiltonian is zero, and at some time in the middle, I measure an observable A. And what I'm interested to find the probability that A gave the result AI, given the fact that I started with psi and that I ended up with phi. That is the thing. Now, this is a very simple exercise to do. First of all, the joint probability to get from psi to get the value ai here and then phi, that is pretty simple to do. I start from phi, so I start from psi, and let me see, suppose it has some time evolution from t1 to t, and then I project on the eigenstate ai that I'm interested here, and take the absolute value square of this. That is the probability to start with psi, evolve up to the intermediate time, and get AI. Now, once I got AI, the state here will become AI. I'm taking the collapse view. It doesn't matter, because for the point of view of calculation, all of them are equivalent. So I will take the state AI. I will propagate from T to T final, and I project it on psi, absolute value square. Now, this is not yet what I'm looking for, because this is just the joint probability of starting from psi to get ai and then to get phi. But it is possible that the final answer will be something else, some other of the eigenvalues here. So in order to condition this, I have to normalize by the probability to get phi at the end. So that would be simply sum over j, and I have the same thing here, phi u from t final aj absolute value square aj u from t to t1, let me call that t2, whatever, it doesn't matter, and psi absolute value square. Okay. So this is a trivial exercise. Now, the way I would like to look at it is different. Suppose, even for simplicity, but just to show you something, in order to find the probability for the outcome ai to the intermediate measurement, when I post-select on something, I have to do a lot of work for it, because I have to compute this normalization coefficient. And this normalization coefficient is a sum over all possible intermediate values that start here. So essentially, that means I would have to solve a different Schrödinger equation for each possible outcome, even if I'm only interested of a single result there. It is, however, much easier mathematically if, instead of applying u to aj, to the intermediate results, I would apply u to the final state, because then I solve a single Schrödinger equation coming backward in time, not n Schrödinger equations. So that shows me that there is a better way of doing this. First of all, let me simplify. The product of two absolute values is just the absolute value square. I take it like that. All right. So for simplicity, even let's suppose that the Hamiltonian is zero, just to see, to start doing the mathematics. So all I have would be something like this, would be psi ai, ai phi, aj, aj psi. Okay. So what I would like to do is to introduce a new object, which is a two-time state. And this two-time state is phi at t2, psi at t1. And once I give this two-time state, you see what I have. I forgot the absolute value squares. What I have here. Here I have the two-time state, phi, psi, and here I slot the projector, p on ai, pj, take absolute value squares, and sum over j. So this is not a scalar product, it's something which has a slot there, into which I'm slotting what happens here in the middle. Now, in principle, I can choose any psi I want and any phi I want. So this is an object that lives into a Hilbert space at T1, and a Hilbert space at T2 is a tensor product. And I will put some signs. This is a space of ket vectors, which propagates forward in time. This is the image that I do here. And the other is a space of brackets, of bra vectors, that start at time t2 and propagate backward in time. Now, what is the advantage of doing this? Why not just do that calculation? Because once you have this idea and you say this is a state in this Hilbert space, you may imagine to have superposition of states like this. Okay? This is a state that was very simple. I did by pre-selecting psi and post-selecting phi, but I can generalize, for example, alpha phi 1 psi 1 plus beta phi 2 psi 2. So I would imagine that this is a general state. The question is, can I do something like this? And the answer is, once you decide to look at objects like that, you realize that yes, that is possible, but that would require to have an ancilla here and essentially prepare some entangled state at time t1, measure on, say, the maximally entangled state at the end, and essentially move a state backwards in time. So, in general, I can prepare any object like this, and I will call that a generalized two-time state. Let me put a big psi. This big psi is a big psi that lives at t1 and t2. Once I do that, I come back there, and I would like to define an operation that is this state psi times the projector I, which is simply means put the projector in the slots. And in that case, what we have there is simply I have the two-state psi times the projector EI divided by the two-time state times the projector PJ and summing over J. I also have to take absolute value square and absolute value square over there. Okay, so far so good. Now, here I put a projector PI because I'm talking about a projective measurement A over there. But in general, you may expect a more complicated thing. You may expect any sort of arbitrary measurement or perhaps a sequence of measurements, unitaries, and things like this. So then it is important to know, how should I describe all those things? So let me remind you, in general, you know the notion of POVM, but that is very misleading. I prefer to look at something else that were called Krauss operators. Okay. So what I would like to do, I would like first to define a detailed measurement. Okay. I will describe what a detailed measurement is. So here is the general procedure. You have some state psi of your system, and you have a state, a ready state of your measuring device. Then you put them in interaction, some U of the system and the measuring device. And psi may get entangled with a measuring device. Now, the detailed measurement is when, after this measuring interaction, I measure the state of the measuring device. I do a complete measurement of the state of the measuring device. Suppose k are a basis, so the vector k are a basis. And this is because I take, by this projection, I take away the entanglement with a measuring device, this I can see that it is just some operator A, index k, that applies on the state psi. It is a linear operator because I can, if I take a superposition of two psi's, just take a superposition of the answers. What is the normalization? So first of all, what is the probability to get the answer k? That is simply, and let me call this is some state psi, is simply the scalar products psi psi. Or if you wish, is psi a dagger k ak psi. This is the normal way in which you can look if you are not talking about two times. Okay? And of course, in order for the total probability to be one, in general, you would like sum over ak dagger ak to be one, sum over k. Now, why is that good? And here comes the important thing. Whenever you make a measurement, you have a measurement and a preparation. So think, for example, at the standard projective measurement. You perform and you have some projector on an eigenvalue, say A, which would be defined by A, A. What do we actually do with this? In the case of an ideal von Neumann measurement, we say we measure whether the system was initially in the, what is the probability that the system being in a state psi has some overlap with A. But then also tells that what happened after that is that I prepare the state A. So at the same time, I have a measurement and I have a preparation. So if I think in the first instance of the very simple thing that I've done here, where I've done a projective measurement, and where I introduce an object like this PI being A, AI, AI, one of these looks back towards the past and hits the state psi, and the other looks towards the future and hits the state phi. So if I look carefully here, the meaning of this one is that it looks towards the past. And the meaning of this one is that it looks towards the future. Okay? In the case of projection operators, there could be confusions. But let me address that immediately. So you see, whenever I try to introduce psi, I try to introduce the projector P in my two-time state, I will have something like my two-time state, psi and phi, and here this being something that propagates towards future and one towards to the past, and I have here AI, AI, propagating like that. So that is, in fact, what is happening there. Now, just to see that this has the notion of propagating toward future, suppose I would have modified my experiment here and say after I perform a projective measurement, I perform here some unitary u. So then what will happen in that case? In fact, I will have some, say, the projector on I. So I will have a Krauss operator that says, look, I projected on I, AI, and then follows some unitary. That is what I would do here. I would say I come, I get a value AI, then AI undergoes a unitary and comes there. So if you look at what would happen here, you would understand that is psi AI, AI U phi. So in this sense, it's clear that this is something that goes towards the past, and this whole thing is something that goes towards future. Now, in general, if I look at Krauss operators that I defined here, the Krauss operator is the entire action when, remember, I start with my system, the measuring device in a zero state, I let them interact, this is the measurement interaction, and I measure completely the measuring device. This entire thing is an operator that acts on psi. So in general, this is some, if I look at a basis, I, j, I have this Cij sum over ij, where this is something going towards past and this is something going towards future. So the general thing that I want to now generalize that story goes like this. I would have some general two-time state, and I would have some general Krauss operators, say AI, where the two-time state would be, I could write in general, you know, some I and J, you know, this is at T1, at T2, times some alpha IJ, sum over IJ, some entangled state of the two times. And what I would have to plug in the middle, I would have to, let's say AK, I would have to plug some arbitrary operators, AK, that look very much the same as JI. This one is going towards T1 and this going towards T2 times some beta ij, sum over ij, index k. I will have more Krauss operators, each describing one particular outcome. So when you look at this, and this is my state psi. So when you look at these two objects here, you already see something interesting. In ordinary quantum mechanics, we discuss about a state psi that is a vector, and we discussed about operators. So these two things were very, thank you. These things were very different in nature. This is just a vector, this is an operator. When I look from the point of view of two-time states, I already see that they are very similar. Now, is that good or not? Well, it is good because if you think what you are doing in the lab, a preparation, essentially you do some measurement and you select a result, and then you let the system propagate. When you want to do a measurement, you do exactly the same thing. You start with some initial state, you perform a measurement, but instead of selecting a result, you look at the relative frequency of a few results. So it would be very, very good to have a sort of formal symmetry between measurements and operators. So in this case, we see that it is basically the same object, a state and a measurement, only the fact that the state was, you know, prepared here and here. And in fact, I can enlarge the Krauss operator, you know, over this entire thing here. That could include perhaps even a lot of measurements here and unitaries and whatever. And the only thing that is important is, you know, what it sends towards the past. So here is that part constitutes the state, and this thing going out here contains the various Krauss operators. So this one already is extremely powerful because it sets up that symmetry in between states and measurements. Okay? And if I were to replace that thing, that formula that discussed about projectors and so on there, that formula would be very simple, you know, the one that I have here. All what I would have to do is I would put here the Krauss operator of state I and the general Krauss operator J. That would give me the results of any measurements that happen here in the time in between T2 and T1, for any generalized state here, and for any measurements that I do there. Well, actually, when I say for any, I have to be a bit careful. What I had up to here, this sort of objects, that is a pure pre- and post-selected state. And this was a detailed Krauss, a detailed measurement. Okay, a measurement in which I fully measured the measuring device, so I let no entanglement between the system and the measurement device. So what we have up to this moment, what we have up to this moment are pure two-time states and detailed measurements. Okay. Which I would like to say that detailed measurements are the sort of dual of the pure states, or are exactly the same as the pure states. Formally, they are the same. But we know that we would like now to have something more. I would like to have mixed states. And I would want to have general measurements. Perhaps degenerate measurements, which once you interact with a measuring device, you do just some coarse graining reading of the measuring device, and your system remains entangled with the measuring device. So the aim now is to do this. And this is what is the more recent work. Well, recent, it's still for many years. So let's try to see how to do that. Okay. There was another board there.
There is one.
There is one in the back. Oh, good. All right. So let me leave you here with the probability to have the answer AI, or, well, the answer I when you start with a pre and post selected state psi and you measure Krauss operators, I don't know, the set of Krauss operators, A. And that was very simple. That was the product between psi and AI over sum over J, the psi and AJ. Remembering that these are the things. So let me now think what I would like to do with a mixed state. Now, a mixed state for pre-selected states only, it is something very simple. You say, I throw a coin with different probabilities, P1 to Pn, and for each outcome, well, a die, and for each outcome of the die, I prepare another pure state. And that gives you the density matrix. Now, when I want to think of a density matrix of pre- and post-selected states, there are two possibilities. So I would like sometime, for simplicity, without yet going into that, here is what I would like to do for simplicity.
That one up there should be mod squared on the...
Mod square, yes, thank you. It looked too simple at this stage. It is mod square, of course. So let me just imagine there are two things. I would like sometimes to prepare the state psi 1 and post-select on phi 1, and other time psi 2 and phi 2, as an example. And I would like to prepare, now there are two things that I can ask. Either to prepare this some percentage, to prepare to have some percentage, say 50%, or well, say 60% and 40%. Or, so this will be the final probabilities to have the two different states. Or else, 60%, 40% attempted preparations. What's the idea? If I have a single forward in time state, whenever I attempt to do, I can prepare it. I give it to you. If I want a two-time state, I prepare, and then I do a final measurement. And I have to select only the cases when this final measurement gives me the state that I want. But the probability of that depends on what I do here in the middle. Because, for example, I can do something that for I perform a measurement here that is orthogonal on that. So then this will never happen. I would take as definition of a mixed state when I attempt to prepare these things, because then I am independent from the things that I do in the middle. More than that, if I'm looking at the attempted preparation, then I can, in every single individual case, I can tell whether it's successful or not. And then the probabilities, with what probabilities they end up to be mixed, well, there would be whatever, depending on what was measured in the middle. On the other hand, if I want to impose that they are mixed with 60-40%, that depends on the particular measurement that I do here, and that I cannot decide in every single instance if I'm successful or not. Because I don't know, suppose somebody else performs this measurement, and I don't know a priori what will be the probabilities. So I have to accumulate an entire statistics, and at the end to say, look, get 100 of this and 60 of that. Okay. So I will focus on this idea. I will attempt to perform a measurement with the probabilities that define my density matrix. So let me then ask the following thing. All right, where am I? Good. So suppose that I attempt with probability PS to prepare my system in the state psi s. Okay? That would be the thing that I would like to do. So first of all, I ask, and I will perform some measurements given by the set of Krauss operators here. So my first question is like this: what is the probability to get the answer, so to be successful to prepare S, given the fact that I attempted, okay, let's say, that I attempted to produce the state psi S, and the fact that I measured A? Okay, that is the first question. So what is that? Well, you see what happens, and let me just for simplicity consider that the state is just some pure state, phi, pure two-time state, phi psi. So I want to start with psi. I want at the end to measure phi, and here I would like to do A and to get the answer AI. And in fact, I want to prepare psi s and end up with phi s. So the joint probability of getting ai and then psi s, that is very simple. That is psi s ai phi s absolute value square. So that is the probability that if I attempted to produce this, I get phi s. I'm successful in preparing. Now, what is the probability to prepare s? Well, that would be ps, the probability that I try, times the probability that I succeed. The probability that I succeed preparing S, given that I attempted and I measure A. Okay? But this is the general probability to succeed, to prepare S. And this would be very simple. This is PS phi S AI psi s absolute value square. But the interesting thing is, what is the probability to prepare s when or in the ensemble of cases when preparation is successful? Well, because it may be that I don't succeed to prepare S at all, and all these things, they do not add up to one. So I have to normalize. So it is PS phi psi AI psi s absolute value square divided by the sum of these things. Here the probability, if I want the probability in general, I want to sum over the various outputs in the middle. If I want just measure A and not to select for a particular answer. So this would be PS sum over I of AI. I just want to make sure that I select that selection, and then it is sum over R, probability PR, sum over J, phi R, AJ, psi R, absolute value square.
I got lost with notation. What is the R subscript doing?
I attempt to prepare psi s with probability ps. This is the probability of the die that I throw. I just put here r not to have the same.
Oh, okay. It's just another one.
It's a dummy index. Okay. So this is the probability to prepare psi s in the sense that I is the probability that I chose to prepare psi s and that I am successful in preparing psi s. And because I want a conditional probability, I normalize over all possibilities.
The sum over PR is equal to 1?
The sum over PR equals 1. Yes, the sum over PR, because I decide to do something. All right, good. Knowing that thing, the question now is what is the probability? So what is the probability of the intermediate measurement given the value I? So the question is what is the probability to get the value I for the intermediate measurement? We know what is the probability of getting the value I for a particular pre and post selected pure state. But while in an ordinary case of density matrices, you would just average with the probabilities, here I can't do that with the raw probabilities, because the success of selecting that pre and post selected thing depends also on I. So that's why this is a little bit more cumbersome. So what I have to do that? Well, okay, I know what is the probability. This is the probability to prepare the state psi s. Okay? And with that probability, I have to see what is the probability of getting AI. So that would be PS sum over, let me call here K that I get, sum over I phi s ai psi s over sum over r pr sum over j phi r aj psi r absolute value square multiply by the probability. So this is the probability of preparing this state. And once I know this state, I know what is the probability to get the answer AI or AK is simply pi s AK psi s absolute value square divided by its conditional probability, which is sum over L phi s a l psi phi s a l, yes, that is the thing. Well, this thing essentially simplifies there. So the probability to get the answer k, probability to get the answer k in the procedure in which I want to prepare the mixed state by attempting with probability PS to do the state psi s, is simply PS times phi s AK psi s absolute value square over sum of R, PR, phi R, AJ, psi R, square, sum over J. Or in general, would be PS, and this is the product between psi and AK, absolute value square over sum over R, probability to attempt R, this two-time state psi, the product with AJ square and sum over J. That is the probability. Okay, it's an interesting exercise, but up to this is just a routine exercise. Looking at it from this point of view, it is very much how you would say how to obtain the probability for an ordinary, one-time mixture, where I give you the ensemble that I prepare. I told you that I prepare different states, psi I, with different probabilities, pi. For each of them, you calculate the probability of a given answer of a measurement, but that relies on the full ensemble that you do. The power of a density matrix is that there could be the entire information of the ensemble is relevant. So, for example, you may have 50% up z, 50% down z, which is the same as 50% plus x, 50% minus x. So while I have obtained this formula, I would like to write it like an object that is a density matrix of two-time states. Okay, so that is what I would like to do now. So I would like to go now from that, very pedestrian way of doing, to generalize to the density matrix. So if you look in an ordinary, if you are in a state psi, just a pure state psi at one time, you can associate a density matrix rho that is psi psi. Now, we've seen that in this case, we had states, we had cats that evolve towards the future and psis that evolve towards the past. So it would be tempting to say that this is the one that evolves towards the past and this is the one that evolves towards the future. And that would be wrong. That is not the meaning of the density matrix, because all these things are at the same time for a density matrix. For a density matrix rho psi psi, they are both at T1. It's not that you have one at T1 and one at T2 facing that way. So the same way as going from pure states to density matrices, I multiply the state, I will multiply both this, the pre-selected and the post-selected state. To make them sure, the ordinary state rho I will write as, say, psi is the ordinary one going forward in time. This will also go forward in time, also from the time t1, but this would be, I will put some sign on it, a dagger, is a dual of that thing. Okay? So in general, I would look at a two-time state in the following way. In the simplest case, I had a two-time state, psi at t1, phi at t2, with this slot in the middle. And then I will do exactly what I do for ordinary density matrix, I take this times psi at time t1 phi sort of dagger at t2, which lives in four Hilbert spaces. Okay, two Hilbert spaces at t1 and two Hilbert spaces at t2. And one of them, these are all moving, I should put here t2 and t1 just to keep some ordering. Both of these are going forward in time. Both of these are going backward in time. But one of them is some state of Bras or of Katz. Some of them are dual. So this is the general object that I will do. And then I will also, as I had an operator, a Krauss operator A, which in general was, you know, some operator going backward in time, a state, and a state going forward in time, I will now get some AK, let me put double, which is something like taking the tensor product of two different ordinary AKs. So it would be like some AK and times an AK, say, dagger. So this one would be a density matrix eta, and this would be, when I double it, a Krauss operator, AK. Okay? And the rules are, I would have a new operation. The rules will be the following. I will define eta times a k in a very simple way. In this particular, this is the particular case when I just have a pure state. But in general, so in that case, this would simply be phi a k psi, this from t2 to t1, and multiply by psi a k phi. Again, t1, t2, reverse. But in general, I could have a general state, which is sum over ps, say phi s psi s, t1, t2. That would be a general density matrix times psi s phi s, you know, t1 dagger, t2 dagger, so the dagger space of those. And in each of the terms here, I would slot a Krauss operator here and a Krauss operator there. Okay? If we do that, so eta times a, that would simply mean eta times a k would simply mean that I put an ak here and an ak there.
With the double bar underneath that ak there?
Yes, the double bar. Somehow to denote that they are density matrices and something else. And in that case, if I take a look what is actually written here, you see, let me expand this absolute value square. Well, that absolute value square is nothing than this thing, okay? So that simply tells me the following formula, that when I got to mixed states, and mixed states here would be, I have a density matrix, which is equals some sum over s, ps, psi s, psi s, the dagger, okay. And I have some operator ak that was the ak times ak dagger multiplied. All of them live in four-dimensional Hilbert spaces. And in that case, all we have over there simplifies now to the following. The probability to get the answer k is simply eta times ak divided by sum over r or j eta times aj without absolute value square. So this is precisely what you would have in the case of a ordinary quantum mechanics. You know, it's very similar. You have really a scalar product. It is very, very similar to taking the scalar product, I don't know, psi, psi, and the projector. The projector K over, in fact, this is the projector PK, PK, if you look a bit more careful. It is just, you know, you can write after you perform a measurement, the state becomes PK and the probability is psi psi. So it's better to write psi psi as being psi PK, PK psi. Only the fact that here's the optical illusion. You say it's a projector, so the product is the same thing. But it is an optical illusion because this PK would generally be something towards past and something towards future, while here both of them are towards past. The ones towards future, they get contracted in the middle. So this is the general thing, but as yet I have written here a density matrix, but here this is still a pure state of the measurement. Now, in general, we can perform a measurement that leaves the state entangled with a measuring device for each particular outcome. Okay? And that is said that for each output, so output k, you have ak indexed by some mu, some degeneracy. And people generally do, they don't know what to do with this, and they write super operators in order to do with this whole thing. But the way to generalize here in that situation, ak is simply sum over mu, a mu k tensor, a mu k dagger. So the issue is, whenever you do a measurement that is not complete, that is degenerate, that is coarse-grained, you could view that as an ensemble of many details measurement that you lump together. And then the question, exactly like density matrices, which is there are many ensembles that correspond to the same density matrix, and the probabilities only depend on the density matrix. Here, the issue is that there are many different coarse-grained measurements that can be viewed as lumping together detailed measurements and are equivalent. So that comes, and by now there is already a complete symmetry between these, because here I could have arbitrary operators. Okay. So that is the view, and once you look here, I would put this generalized density matrix. So again, my whole idea was that measurements and states are the same thing. Operationally, you do the same thing in the lab. So you would like the state to be described by the same objects as the measurement. So as I have a density matrix that describes the state, I would also have something similar for measurements. I will call that a density matrix of measurements. Of course, for each output, I have another density matrix, but here I have only one because I'm interested only in this preparation. So that is the... It is not so much a view for computing, although you may use it for computing the things. It is, what do we believe that nature actually is? And what are the basic objects to describe nature? Okay. Now, all I want to say that one could generalize pre- and post-selected states to multiple time states. And then one can perform multi-time measurements, and this formalism expands to that. So that is all I had to say. Thank you. Okay. Yeah.
Any questions from you guys?
Thank you.
I guess just one.
Yes.
So you generalize the states, two-time states, to mixed two-time states.
Yes.
Is there an analogous channel, like a two-time channel?
Well, this is a two-time channel, if you call it a channel. But I believe that calling it a channel is, in fact, a channel, generally, you do not put what is the final thing. You do not post-select. Plus, the whole idea of thinking it like a channel defeats the purpose, because you have this image of a state that propagates towards the future, and it just goes through this channel and it emerges. When you post-select, then it is really the pre- and post-selected thing that looks together. And the measurements, or whatever the channel is, become the equivalent of the state. So there are always different ways, that is, equivalent formalism. I could do this just talking about states and unitary operators and projective measurements, and they decompose every operation like that. The way in which I think about them depends on the formalism that I use. If I would try to think of it like a channel, that will lead me in a wrong direction. That is my claim. That is not what nature wants to tell me. Nature wants to tell me that the most detailed thing for the time in between is given by pre- and post-selecting. Of course, I can forget about the post-selection, and then it is an ordinary channel. But that forgetting, why should I forget? If I can start with something that gives me the cleanest thing. In fact, once I take density matrices, that includes forgetting, that includes everything. But just the idea of thinking it like a channel directs you to think just of one-time evolution, while in fact the entire point about this is that everything in the middle is determined by the ends. So, there are a zillion equivalent formalism. The question is, which is the most natural? And one good thing here is because in general people talk about a density matrix, a super operator. Those are, they are completely different in nature. A super operator doesn't look like a density matrix. It's a completely different object, mathematically. Here they are the same object, and everything is simply an ordinary scalar product between them. So in this sense, I believe that this is the good way of looking at things. Okay.
What about time symmetry in this framework? So the ABL framework is clearly time symmetric.
This is fully time symmetric because it deals with, so the moment you take each elementary object is made out of things coming forward and backward in time. And from that point of view, none of them, not the forward, not the backward, has any particular, more than the other. They are on equal footing. And that happens up to the density matrix level. And what is the strong thing is that there exists now, you may ask which ensembles of detailed measurements give the same thing. Once you have an object like a density matrix for measurements, then you are on a much stronger position to answer all those questions. They become similar to what you do for mixed states. And it is fully time symmetric. That is the thing.
Any more questions? Okay, I have lots of questions, but I'll
good. All right. So in that case, thank you very much.